Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The lead up to the sort of moments before my stroke sort of happened was I felt really funny and flustered, and I remember going in the bathroom and sort of splashing my face with water and sort of thinking I was sort of having a bit of a hot flush. And it was a weird feeling because I've suffered like with panic attacks in the past, and I sort of thought I was just having a bit of a panic attack and a bit sort of anxious. So I sort of had a bit of water on my face, and I was sat in the bathroom for about 10-15 minutes, and I just remember sort of falling to the bathroom floor. I'm sort of panicking a bit, thinking like, why can I not feel the left side of my body? And I started to sort of think, am I having a stroke or a heart attack here? And that's when I rang 999. I thought, I'm going to have to sort of ring them. And I rang 999 and I said, I'm not being funny, but I think I'm having a stroke or a heart attack. I don't know which one, but I just don't feel right. So that was the last sort of communication I remember. I mean, I remember waking up in a hospital bed. I remember seeing the blue curtain on the hospital ward, and I didn't have a clue what was going on. And I remember sleeping a lot. And the one time I sort of woke up after a few weeks, after coming out of intensive care, I remember there was about two or three consultants around my bed, and that's when they sort of told me that you've had a stroke. The more I sort of understand about what's happened to me, the more hopefully I'll recover from it. So I got sort of as much knowledge as I could of it, and then I was having intense physiotherapy with the physiotherapist and the occupational therapist. So that lasted for 2 or 3 months, so that was really helpful.
Hello, Mark Goodyear here. Welcome to Stroke Stories. This is the podcast that seeks out and hears from stroke survivors. Today we hear from Dan Holston in Manchester. Dan suffered a stroke at the age of 31.
I was an account manager for a logistics company, which I really, really enjoyed before my stroke. I lived a very active life, played a lot of football with my friends, went to the gym regularly, went to the swimming bath with my daughter. My daughter's 8. We did like a lot of very active things outdoors, and yeah, I was very, very active before my stroke. I mean, I had the occasional headache, but you don't really think anything of it at the time, and it's like you sort of just have a paracetamol and think nothing of it. There was no sort of warning signs before. I didn't smoke, I didn't drink, and I didn't really sort of do anything to sort of give any indication to my body that I was going to have a stroke. My stroke was caused by an AVM on my brain. So that was there since I was born. I knew nothing about it until my stroke. From what I remember, the day on the stroke is very, very blurry. On the 14th of March, I went to work as normal. I remember briefly picking my daughter up from school. I sort of picked her up from school as normal. We got back home, and I remember making a tea. Anything after that is very, very blurry. My daughter's told me things since, but all I remember sort of the lead up to the sort of moments before my stroke sort of happened was I felt really funny and flustered, and I remember going in the bathroom and sort of splashing my face with water and sort of thinking I was sort of having a bit of a hot flush. And It was a weird feeling because I've suffered like with panic attacks in the past, and I sort of thought I was just having a bit of like a bit of a sort of panic attack and a bit sort of anxious. So I sort of had a bit of water on my face, and I was sat in the bathroom for about 10, 15 minutes, and I just remember sort of falling to the bathroom floor, and my whole left side of my body just disappeared. I was sort of trying to touch my arm, trying to touch my leg, and like trying to touch my sort of just anything on the left side of my body. I just couldn't feel, and it was like it was disappeared completely. And that's when I sort of panicked in my mind, and I thought, this is not a panic attack. It's a lot more serious than this. So I was sort of lay on the bathroom floor in the recovery position, and my daughters heard this on the outside of the bathroom and sort of come in the bathroom and see me on the bathroom floor. And bless her, she's brought me a bottle of water and sort of left a bottle of water next to me and left that in the bathroom with me, and then sort of stood outside and sat on the step at the top of the stairs. So I'm sort of panicking a bit, thinking like, why can I not feel the left side of my body? And I started to sort of think, am I having a stroke or a heart attack here? And that's when I rang 999. I thought, I'm gonna have to sort of ring him. And I rang 999, and I said, I'm not being funny, but I think I'm having a stroke or a heart attack. I can't sort of, I don't know which one, but I just don't feel right. So that was the last sort of communication I remember. All I remember after that is the conversation on the phone with 999. I said, I feel like I'm dying. And then on the other side of the bathroom door, my daughter was there, and all I could hear was, Daddy, please don't die.
Dan was in hospital for a total of 8 months.
I mean, I remember waking up in a hospital bed. I remember seeing the blue curtain on the hospital ward, and I didn't have a clue what was going on. And I remember sleeping a lot, and the one time I sort of woke up after a few weeks after coming out of intensive care, I remember there was about two or three consultants around my bed, and that's when they sort of told me that you've had a stroke. That was a bit scary because I remember saying to them, like, I'm 31, how can I have a stroke? So that was quite a lot to take in at the time. Unfortunately, because of the bleed I had on my brain caused by the AVM, they did a CT scan, and they sent me up to Salford Royal, and that's when they did an embolisation on my brain. So they coiled up the blood vessel in my brain to start stop the brain hemorrhage. So that was done while I was in Salford Royal, and that operation saved my life, I believe. The way they described that, I was in a pretty bad way, and it was quite a scary time for my family at that time. In the general ward I was in, was it like a general ward after coming out of ICU, and I was waiting to sort of get into rehabilitation. And once I'd sort of rested a bit and recuperated after the first sort of few weeks of sleeping a lot and having a lot of time to sort of rest my brain and recover from the surgery, I was sort of itching to get into rehabilitation, and I was waiting to sort of get into like the physiotherapist and stuff like that. And once I was moved from the stroke ward to the rehabilitation unit where I started my rehabilitation. That was really good. So when I got to the ward, I got my phone given back to me. After my brain recovered from the surgery, I was able to sort of read a few books, and I did a lot of research while I was in my hospital bed. Stumbled across neuroplasticity, and that sort of became my sort of new best friend, so to speak. I did a lot of research on stroke recovery. I wanted to try and understand as much about the situation as I possibly could, because I thought the more I sort of understand about what's happened to me, the more hopefully I'll recover from it. So I got sort of as much knowledge as I could of it, and then I was having intense physiotherapy with the physiotherapist and the occupational therapist. So that lasted for 2 or 3 months. So that was really helpful.
Initially, Dan found it difficult returning home.
At first, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to walk again. The stroke left me with severe spasticity down my left-hand side, and my whole left side completely stopped working. And obviously, going up the stairs was going to be an issue. Walking was an issue until I obviously took my first sort of steps with the physiotherapist again. So getting upstairs was a no-go. So home wasn't an option until I sort of got myself into more of a mobile. Until my mobility improved, but that sort of lasted for a few months until I could get myself in a sort of safe position to return home. From a physical point of view, it unfortunately left me with quite a few scars, so to speak. My left hand and my left arm still currently is a work in progress. I'm getting regular Botox to sort of see if that improves. We're getting a bit of movement from the shoulder at the moment, so that's a work in progress. The leg and the foot is improving a lot. I was left with something called foot drop, so where my ankle and my foot doesn't work at all, quite similar to my hand. So I'm sort of doing daily exercises and trying to sort of improve the strength in everything that's been affected by the stroke. But everything that happens to the left hand side, it's sort of coming back very slowly. In the early stages, it really did affect me massively. I was very emotional for the first few months, and I mean, I'm still quite emotional now, but I think it was the uncertainty of not sort of knowing what was going to happen, where I was going to be, what I was going to sort of like look like after sort of coming out of hospital. Obviously, I knew everything on my left side of my body was completely paralyzed. So that to me, when I was in hospital bed, that was the new normal for me, and that was very hard to sort of come to terms with, like just little things like being able to sort of push my daughter on the swings or go for a walk with her, and just little things like that. The realization of this was the new me, and I'd never make a sort of recovery from that, and it was very emotional. It was an emotional roller coaster at first. Like, I'd go 1 minute from feeling down, depressed, and sorry for myself, and sort of down in the dumps, and that was weird, because then that would then be counteracted with, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start walking again, and then it was just very up and down in the early stages. But as the time went on, that sort of got a lot easier to manage. The more sort of positive I looked at things, the more I sort of looked into things and thought, it's just another obstacle to overcome, and I can do it like I've done the last obstacle. And I've just sort of used that whole mentality through the whole process. Like, I've just approached everything with that sort of positive mindset and just the hard work and determination.
Coming up, Dan talks about his long-term goals.
I had a lot of early goals of being able to walk unaided. But like the long-term goals of going back to work, driving again, I'm starting to sort of put the wheels in motion in that aspect. I went through a post-stroke driving assessment and I passed that. So I've got the green light to get back on the road now. So yeah, that is one of the goals I was really happy to get done, because driving was really big for me and my daughter.
And supporting your loved ones.
Their role in this is pivotal. It's really important. Their like loved ones' feelings as well, because obviously a stroke survivor, being around in the early stages and beyond that, being in that sort of environment is not a nice place to be for some people, because from a stroke survivor's point of view, it can be a very frustrating place.
Dan is an active participant in the local support groups.
I did a lot of reading and research when I was in hospital. So I was looking at joining other groups and sort of support networks around the area, sort of globally, to sort of hopefully touching base with people that have sort of been in a similar situation, to sort of get that reassurance that there is sort of hope after sort of a stroke. And because it's a very lonely place, so I stumbled across two very good networks. So the first being a local charity in Stockport called Stroke Information. I've become very involved with them over the last 12 months, and they've been really supportive. There's a very good network of people in that group that are all stroke survivors, and there's a lot of knowledge and a lot of sort of experience, and that gives you a good, it gives you that sort of comfort of knowing that you're not alone, and that sort of feeling that there is hope for the future, because you sort of look at somebody a few months down the line, a few years down the line, where they were, and you sort of see them now. It's comforting knowing that if they've done it, there's no reason why I can't do it. So yeah, they've been very helpful. I've met some very nice people from there. Obviously, Different Strokes as well on Facebook. I've joined their community. That's been really helpful. I've met some very, very nice, wonderful people in there, which have people that I probably would have, well, I wouldn't have met these sort of people if I hadn't have had a stroke. So it's nice to sort of come across people that are in a similar situation, but people that have become friends and people that you sort of can confide in when you're sort of having a bad day with a stroke, because they can relate to how you're feeling. So them two groups have been really, really helpful for me. I've been really positive about sort of setting myself targets and goals. I've obviously given myself short-term goals, long-term goals. I had a lot of early goals of being able to walk unaided. But like the long-term goals of going back to work, driving again, I'm starting to sort of put the wheels in motion in that aspect. I went through a post-stroke driving assessment and I passed that. So I've got the green light to get back on the road now. So yeah, that is one of the goals I was really happy to get done, because driving was really big for me and my daughter. That's a really good morale booster, and that's one goal I'm glad I've sort of achieved. So yeah, I'm just currently waiting for delivery of my new adapted vehicle, so that's very exciting. Going back to work, that's one thing that's on my neck, that's sort of next on the list. That's up there as a big goal as well, because I really do want to go back to work. I've been applying for sort of jobs over the last few weeks. I feel like I'm sort of ready to take that next step and sort of ready to get back to that sort of lifestyle of that normal sort of day to day, Monday to Friday. It really excites me, to be honest, to get back to that routine.
And Dan thinks you should never lose hope.
The advice I give to a stroke survivor, it's a very, very dark place. It's a very uncertain place in the early days. You don't know what's going to go on. You don't know sort of where you're going to be. And it's a scary place to be in mentally. One main thing I'd probably say is just don't give up that sort of hope of coming back from it and regaining what life you had before, because it is possible. It's I'm at that stage now where I'm sort of starting to regain the pre-stroke me, which is a really big thing, because obviously in the early stages those days feel like they're never going to come, and having that sort of positive mindset from the start really does make a big difference, and sort of reaching out to people that have been in a similar situation really does help, and getting that sort of comfort of knowing that you can get to where you want to be with that positive mindset. Advice I'd give to a loved one of a stroke survivor, I mean, there's not so much advice, but their like loved ones, their role in this is pivotal. It's really important. Their like loved ones' feelings as well, because obviously a stroke survivor, being around in the early stages and beyond that, being in that sort of environment is not a nice place to be for some people, because from a stroke survivor's point of view, it can be a very frustrating place, and those frustrations often are taken out on loved ones, and I'm guilty of it myself. I've been very frustrated and I've taken it out on loved ones, and I never sort of consider those feelings of those sort of around me and how hard it is for them, because it's very hard for those as well around.
Dan has made a significant recovery from his stroke and he's working towards finding employment again. Thank you very much for listening to Stroke Stories. Please do subscribe, rate and comment on the episodes you hear to help us spread the word. And if you are a stroke survivor or you know one and there's a story you can share, please get in touch on Twitter or Instagram. Our DMs are always open. The Stroke Stories podcast was produced by Aidan Judd. I'm Mark Goodyear. Thank you for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.